Hello and welcome to the Bastards and Broken Things Hot Take Podcast with me, Sir Len, and my trusty Squire Gareth. Hello,
Sir Gareth.
Squire Gareth.
Sir Gareth.
Yeah, you were a sir. You have been demoted. If you had listened to the in-depth podcast review last week, Gareth, unfortunately, Bronze John sent a raven to the Citadel and they've scrapped your knighthood. They said you were too young. So they just want to wait a few more years. You've got to prove yourself. So that's why you're now my squire. And every week, me and my squire come to you straight after watching the episode for a little taster.
I'm going to be king one day. Teaser. Just you bear that in mind, all right?
Well, we'll see. A little morsel of what we're thinking before we record our deep dive podcast in a day or two's time.
Some hot takes.
So
hot D.
These are... Yeah, so what we've decided, and it's evolving as we go, but hot takes, yes, we have several hot takes, we number them, and then basically we'll go into those, obviously in a load more detail in the in-depth review, which comes out in a few days, but this is just our initial thoughts straight after watching the episode. Did you enjoy it, Gareth? Episode 2 is titled The Rogue Prince.
Good name. Good nickname for me, I reckon.
Good nickname, good short story, and also just a good episode title.
All right, is this one of the hot takes? Did we like it? Hot take number one.
No. Hot take number one is different to that. Okay. You just tell me if you liked it, first of all, and no score because the scores are reserved for the deep dive.
All right. Hot take number one. Yes, I liked it.
Oh, lovely. Lovely stuff. Broke the rules, but
did
it's
you
fine.
Like it?
That's why you're
hot take number two.
Squire.
Here we go.
Yeah, I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it, actually, Gareth. I will say, and we'll talk about this in detail, obviously, but it was very slow, and that had to happen. It's kind of one of those, when I think back to Game of Thrones and I think back to episode 2, The King's Road, you know, where they're traveling, quite a slow episode as well, with a lot of conversational moments, building up, you know, these character relationships and moving the pieces.
Correct.
And it kind of felt like you have to have these episodes. And to be honest with you, some of the most intriguing moments in Game of Thrones are just two people talking. Mm-hmm. Now, do I think they nailed that? No. Huh. I think there wasn't many... There was one conversation where I was like, yeah, this is fucking good. This is really good. The others were kind of like serving a purpose, but they didn't necessarily intrigue me as much as some of those other Game of Thrones scenes. However, I did like the episode. And even though it was slow paced,
that surprises me a little bit. Actually, I have to say, like, you know, these are our hot takes. They're unfiltered. They're, you know,
yeah. I'm processing my thoughts as I go. Literally,
they're uninfluenced as well. Because as much as we don't want to, we are all. Everybody is susceptible to some influence of some sort.
Oh, and yeah.
So, you know, trying to make a determination on the quality of an episode before you've had a chance to kind of talk it through and kind of go, oh yeah, I suppose I didn't think about it like that. I thought there are a lot of moments in this, like it was slow and it was a movement, a chess piece movement episode rather than a chess piece destruction
taking episode.
Yeah, taking. Yeah. Good. That's it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks for helping there.
I know the lingo.
Yeah. It was that, but I thought there were some really good moments, like that moments of tension, and like I thought that some of the one-on-one conversations were really good. I thought, actually, can I morph this into my first hot take?
Yeah, definitely morph it away, Morpheus.
I thought that the acting went up a notch in this episode compared to last week.
Oh yeah.
And I thought that there were a couple of candidates in particular, actually, that I thought shone in this episode. I'm going to talk about like three characters that I think did really well. Corlys.
Yeah, go on.
I was a little bit worried about Corlys after episode 1.
Yeah. The sea snake.
In terms of acting performance. But I thought he was great here. He was really good.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
Rhaenyra, I thought she was cracking in this episode. Just maybe not a lot to do last time, possibly. So we got to see a lot more of her, and I thought she was great. And I thought Alison was really good as well.
Interesting that they're going to be, you know, maybe 4 or 5 episodes in, we're not going to be with these actors anymore playing Alison and Rhaenyra. So that is fascinating. They're doing a fantastic job, but we've got that time jump that we know is coming. So that's very interesting. I thought they did very well as well. I'll go with my hot take, Gareth.
Yep.
No title music. No new title music.
Right, I was going to say. You missed.
Yeah, fuck it. Have you heard that one before? Have you heard the banger that they played at the start of the episode? I cannot believe it. And this is going to be a contentious point in the Deep Dive podcast, because I know for a fact John has even said in a previous episode that he is going to be... We joked about them using the same music. We literally joked about it. Such a bizarre decision. You've got an extremely talented composer.
It's lazy. It's not bizarre. It's just lazy.
Yeah. Do you reckon they went up to Raymond Duardi and was like, oh, Raymond, can you do anything better than... Game of Thrones? He was like, it's pretty good though, isn't it? Just smack that on. They're like, you reckon? I'll make some other music, don't worry, just not the title music, but you know, it's fine.
Do a little background, little different images, and they won't even notice. Probably they won't remember.
I mean, we won't talk about the image, we'll talk about the images in the deep dive, because I've got a lot to say on that, but I just thought the lack of ambition to compose a new iconic piece of music is startling to me, because you've got to back yourself. Like, I don't know what they're doing here. Does this mean that every Game of Thrones show or spin-off is going to have the Game of Thrones music? I think that's really cheap. I think that's really, and I have to say, it almost knocked a, well, I can't give him a score, but it almost, I'm still processing that, but it almost really, really pissed me off.
Well, no, you can't hold that against this episode. That's not fair.
No, of course, but as a series, it might do at the end, Gareth. No, I'm joking. Obviously, it won't take a whole fucking blueberry off my score, but it annoyed me.
I think it's like risk averse. That's what it shows. And do you know what?
Yeah.
I reckon if D&D were in charge of this, they'd have come up. They would have ordered new music.
Yeah, I think they might have actually. Even though I think they're dickheads.
Yep.
But
And you know, they make a lot of wrong decisions. This seems to me like somebody trying to not make a wrong decision.
Not make a mistake.
Not making a mistake. It's a sideways pass from midfield, you know, rather than an ambitious attempt.
Soccer reference.
At playing a through ball.
True. Go on and Gareth, your next hot take.
Hot take number 3.
Yeah, correct.
Is how much of a sly dog Otto is.
Yeah, he is. Tywin has learnt through history, some might say.
Indeed.
You know, Tywin probably rules, obviously, with much more fear. But the interesting thing about the Hand of the King position in this era of Westeros is they weren't just Hand of the King for like a day. They've been like Jaehaerys's hand before Otto was like 40 years the hand, or 44 years or something. So, you know, they hold the position for a long time and they have a lot of fucking influence.
They talk about it in that way in the Game of Thrones era as well. Like, they're like, you know, the Hand of the King. Oh, well, that you know, that's that. You're sorted. But obviously events transpire. I think, this is the era that kind of those traditional values about the role it comes from, I guess.
And he is, you're right, he is sly.
He's very clever.
He does rule out some things, but he more often than not, even when like Lady Lena's mentioned, you know, that the proposals happened, he sort of backs it, but then draws it back to his own experience with his wife recently dying.
Exactly.
And it's very subtle. You know, that's the moment where you're like, he's clever. Like, he's using emotions to manipulate instead of just giving advice.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Emotional manipulation, cloaking his real motives. So, you know, he essentially concedes that Lena is a good match, and that makes sense.
Yeah,
he's like, yeah, all right,
makes perfect sense.
That does make sense, and then plays the emotion card you know, I don't envy you having to do this because that's really tough. And he obviously knows his king well, and he knows that this isn't something that he's going to want to do. So he's just playing into that, and without ever explicitly saying, "Yo, marry my daughter."
Smart man.
He's put her in place.
Very smart man.
Yeah.
I'll go for hot take 4, Gareth.
Go on.
And I will say that it was such a dick move by Viserys on Rhaenyra at the end of the episode, by basically just like reconciling with her and then fucking destroying everything. I was like, what is he doing? He reconciles by saying, look, you know, I need to marry again. Yeah. She's like, yeah, I understand. It's for the realm. Doesn't tell her who he's thinking about, and then just announces it in the fucking small council. Anyway, blew my mind.
I don't necessarily think his decision, the decisions that he made, were outrageous. Right? They kind of make sense. You can understand why he's gone down this route, whether you agree or disagree. Right? But what you're absolutely right. What makes zero sense is him just kind of announcing it in the small council.
Bizarre.
Why wouldn't you go and have a quiet word with Corlys and a quiet word with your daughter? Like, just a heads up. Look, I know you're not going to be happy about this. Actually marrying your best friend. Give her a heads BFF. Up, man. Come on.
BFF, yeah. So.
And, you know, you don't have to be versed in the world of Song of Ice and Fire to know.
Mm-hmm.
This is not good for their relationship long term, and I'm talking about Rhaenyra's and Alicent's relationship long term, because Alicent is gonna sire, you know, a threat,
boys,
and that's not good.
Potentially, yes, we're not saying that's the intention.
Absolutely. But you know, this is the world that they live in. They know this is destiny, right? Come on, just give her a quick heads up. And Corlys, like, all right, you know, he might not be your best friend, but you're trying to sort of extend an olive branch moments before this. Just say, look, she's a little bit young, I've got to be honest.
Yeah, I think Viserys is a wise king in some ways, and he's obviously a pacifist king. He wants to continue the peace that Jaehaerys brought before him for over 60 years. And that's his downfall at times, because he isn't ruthless enough to do the things that he needs to do.
This is what they say about him, isn't it? He's a great man. He's not necessarily a great king.
Yeah. And even though on the surface he seems like he's got his head switched on, you know, a ruler has to be able to make the tough decisions. I mean, look, to, you know, not spoiling Game of Thrones, but, you know, Robb Stark made some terrible, terrible decisions, which ended up getting him fucked over.
What?
Eddard Stark. You have people in these positions of power who just need to be wiser. And the best ruler is someone who is able to make the hard decisions for the benefit of the realm, and not necessarily themselves, but also, you're right, the way he handled the whole situation is bizarre. Like I said, in Fire and Blood, it's kind of a couple of sentences. It's like his small council said that Lady Lena was a fantastic match, but he surprised them all by choosing Lady Alicent as his wife. That's literally the sentence, you know?
Yeah.
And you kind of sit there and go, okay, cool. And now you're getting all this extra detail and these extra conversations, these extra motivations. It's fascinating and it's great stuff. Yeah. Anyway, I thought it was a dick move. Very interesting. And I'm really looking forward to getting everyone's take on that in the deep dive.
Yeah.
Final hot take from you, please, Gareth.
My final hot take is... I'm going to talk about kind of the impact of a specific scene, and that is the scene where Daemon, when we're reintroduced to Daemon at Dragonstone, Dragonstone looked kind of cool, shrouded in the mist, by the way.
Way cooler than it did in season 7 and 8 of Game of Thrones. I think it looked better here than it has all of that time.
So I read about this actually briefly. It's apparently it's been kind of constructed in the studio, that set.
Interesting.
Whereas in Game of Thrones, though, it was
actually on location.
In Spain, I think.
I remember.
But what I think the impact of that scene with Daemon is that I think he's less calculated and less confident than I thought he was.
He's the rogue prince.
But you know, like, I don't know, you get the impression when you read about him, I think, that he was this like cocksure, arrogant, like he had his plan. He knew what he was doing, and he was just going to do it no matter, like, damn the consequences, you know. Whereas what I think we saw when he kind of, like, in the immediate aftermath of the scene and at the end of it as well, when he's in the face off with Rhaenyra, is that he actually hasn't got this all planned out, and he doesn't feel entirely confident about what's happening. He's kind of making it up as he goes along.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he believes it's his... I mean, this is tough again, because it's like, you know, we'll talk about the book stuff, but you just get sentences, and obviously there's short stories and stuff, but it's hard to get a grasp of his character until we do an in-depth look at it like this show.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So we're seeing... You're right, he is fumbling his way through. He's coming up with ways to annoy the king. He's inhabiting Dragonstone for 6 months after he's been sent to the Vale. You know, Dragonstone is the ancestral seat of the Targaryens, the seat of the heir of the throne. Actually, that is Rhaenyra's seat. She could be staying there right now because she is the heir to the throne. So he's just doing things to destabilize as much as he can. And, you know, that's a tactic that people use. And he that scene on the bridge at Dragonstone is a definite highlight, which I'm sure we'll talk about a lot more in the deep dive, because there's a lot of interesting things going on there. But I will say that it was the standout moment of the episode, without a shadow of a doubt. Like, visually, Syrax arriving, Caraxes sort of slurking, and sort of the... I thought the CG was pretty good on Caraxes and Syrax, in these scenes.
Syrax's arrival and through the clouds. That was good.
Awesome.
That gave me...
It's like a shark. It's like a shark.
Hey?
In water. It's like a shark in water. It's like a shadow.
Yeah.
And then it just... Everyone's like... Duh, 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 duh,
we're going to need duh, a bigger bridge.
Yeah, literally. I thought it was awesome. And the tension in that scene was brilliant.
Yeah.
Even though I know kind of what happens, or I think I do, unless the show changes it, I was sitting there going, this is great TV. But I think that's it for our hot takes. I don't want to deal with... the point of these isn't to, you know, go into too much detail. It's to give you our just random thoughts, and I think we have spoke quite randomly, and now we need to go collate all of our feedback. And your feedback, of course. You can write us at fancriticalpodcast@gmail.com and let us know your thoughts. And the deep dive is going to be featuring, obviously, other members of the podcast. As I said, John's already going to slag off the intro, so don't even worry about that. I can bet my house he's going to go mental that they use the same music. Mm. We'll talk about what the intro means. We will talk about that interesting conversation on the bridge. We're going to talk about the ramifications of Alicent being chosen. We're going to talk about all of that sort of stuff in the Deep Dive podcast. So please do check that out in the next few days. In the meantime, as I said, email us. Go to patreon.com/fancritical if you do want to sponsor us further. And I'm going to get, you know, little Squire Gareth to get me nice and fat, get me loads of food.
Too late.
Get me
that.
Loads of booze.
Too late.
Yeah? No? Get me all that food and booze, please, little squire boy. And then we'll be back with Bronze John, Lady Emma, and Lady Lucy, probably. So thank you very much for listening, guys. That's our hot take. We really enjoyed the episode. I would say it's a good springboard from the premiere. But I'll be fascinated to hear what the other members of the podcast think and what you guys think. So thanks, guys. Catch you at the deep dive in a few days' time. See ya. See ya.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.